Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, chatting today across a portion of this large country I live in, from Vancouver to Calgary, which is in the next province over, but has a markedly different temperature, especially at the moment, as winter's not quite finished yet. I'm going to be speaking with Heather Armson, who is Assistant Dean for CME, Continuing Medical Education, at the University of Calgary, where she's also faculty in family medicine. And her focus in that dean role is on personalized learning. I've asked Heather to chat with me today because she and her colleagues have a paper coming out in the May 2019 issue of Medical Education, entitled Identifying Coaching Skills to Improve Feedback Use in Postgraduate Medical Education. Heather, thank you very much for taking the time to chat.
Thank you for the encouragement to talk about our paper.
It's a paper I imagine you don't need a lot of encouragement to talk about, because it does so interestingly take us the next step on a topic that's really become quite prominent in the field of late, which is coaching skills. And it's easy to imagine in your role focusing on personalized learning why coaching might matter. But do you mind starting by sharing with our listeners some of the things that you're involved with, either at Calgary or otherwise, that made this a topic worth pursuing for you?
Sure. I work in the residency teaching program, the family medicine resident teaching program at Calgary. So delivering feedback all the time and trying to find better and better ways in which to make that feedback meaningful and encourage residents to integrate it into their future practice. As well, in my role as assistant dean, I work with residents who've been identified as having some significant deficits. And so, again, tried to not only discuss feedback, but also provide and encourage participation in that discussion so that real change can occur. And finally, then for the last 10 years, I've been working with a group of researchers who are also included in this paper, in Joan Sargent's group, looking at starting with self-assessment and then moving through to work on developing a model to provide feedback in which coaching was part of that. Once we completed that work on the what's called the R2C2 model, we discovered that we really didn't have quite as much information about the nitty-gritty aspects of the coaching that occurs and what good coaching looks like, as opposed to inadequate coaching, and looking at what the skills were that allowed residents to incorporate the feedback and then move forward to apply the feedback in their subsequent learning.
One of the things I come across quite routinely when this topic of coaching comes up is a little bit of uncertainty as to what's meant by that concept itself. You mentioned supervision and coaching and feedback provision and a number of other things that mm-hmm. can get conflated. So how are you defining coaching in the particular context of the study that we'll be talking about?
So we actually decided as a group to use Van Nieuwenberg's definition, which includes a one-to-one conversation that's focused on enhancement of learning through improving self-awareness and sense of personal responsibility. That piece, especially, we found very important, where the coach facilitates self-directed learning of the coachee through what we end up calling micro skills, so questioning, active listening, and challenging in a supporting and encouraging climate. So that's the definition that we're using of coaching in this particular work.
Okay, and you very deliberately, as I understand it, looked for coaching activities or skills that were being used that were both process oriented and content oriented, and why was that framing thought to be a useful way of sort of setting your focus?
So we, prior to performing this study, we actually did a fairly extensive literature review looking at the coaching skills that are described within the literature, and found that in order to kind of quantify them, to make them easy for us to kind of work with and remember, that from our perspective, we divided them into two sets of skills: process skills and content skills. And as we'll maybe talk about later, there certainly is a lot of interconnectedness in those skills. But by separating them out into these two categories, it allowed us then to talk about the skills that coaches need in each of these environments to perform adequately and to develop good relationships with their coachees.
With respect to content specifically, I've encountered some models that suggest that the coach doesn't require any content knowledge. It's just about facilitating or leading the individual to question and self-discover. Were the coaches in this particular study individuals who were expected to and obviously did have a particular clinical background?
Yes, they did. And we felt that was absolutely crucial given the role in medical education coaching, which is quite different from coaching you see, for example, in settings where coaching has first developed, like sports, music, and more recently, business. In those environments, the impact of coaching is on a one-to-one, the impact is on one person, the coachee. In the settings in which coaching is being provided in the medical education environment, The coaches need to have responsibility as well for patient safety and competence. And so their knowledge then becomes really critical in helping the resident understand where those gaps in performance might be.
I want to jump to what you just alluded to in terms of the interconnectedness, given that we're talking about the process and content-oriented skills. So I think We'll maybe just leave the methodological details for people to find in the article, but I'll just say briefly that we're talking about a study in which you analyzed a pair of feedback sessions for 15 separate supervisor-resident dyads. And as you listened to and went through and analyzed what was present in those interactions, what does it mean to say that the process and content skills were highly interrelated? It just wasn't possible to do one effectively without the other, or?
Absolutely. You know, we found that although the skills could be identified separately, that even if you had very good process skills, if you didn't understand the context and the learner you were working with did not understand the content, then there was nothing to discuss and nothing to focus the coaching upon. Similarly, if you simply focused on the content of whatever the feedback was, and did not have appropriate process skills, we found that the coaching did not progress adequately. And so we found people moving into one of our second overarching findings, which was preceptors providing kind of a monologue and their interpretation of the data and their interpretation of what the next steps were, instead of having a collaborative conversation in which the resident and the preceptor together decide on the goals and develop the next steps.
Let's talk about that a little bit more. Just before we do, it's actually quite reassuring to me personally. In terms of my own experiences having coaches, it's actually purely anecdotal, but it's always been a very different experience when I had somebody offering coaching who understood the context and had some content to offer, as opposed to those who followed the models of suggesting that you just need to be, you know, a talented live ear. You didn't have an opportunity to speak with these supervisor resident dyads, I understand, but have you anecdotally heard similar things in your setting? Are there coaching relationships that people seem to appreciate more than others?
Well, we actually did speak to the dyads in the previous paper, and we found that the residents in particular really liked this opportunity to kind of set their course, but be guided by the preceptor's knowledge, and especially if they developed a trusting relationship. And so they found this approach much more promising, because then they could actually see their progress occurring. We talked very briefly about it in this paper, but learning change plans were developed and then reviewed at subsequent sessions. So there became more accountability as well. So we actually do know something about how the preceptors and the residents both regarded this approach.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And so has that led you to think about the monologues that the coaches could fall into? I was intrigued in part because you described monologue versus dialogue more as a balance, rather than suggesting that it was inappropriate to monologue in all cases. Again, can I ask you to elaborate on that and give us an example of the sorts of things that people found helpful or challenging?
Sure. So we found that some preceptors, despite having trained everyone in the model, that some preceptors reverted to a more typical feedback conversation, in which they interpreted the data for the residents, then provided their thoughts as to what the gaps were, and then suggested approaches that the resident might take, with lots of advice giving about that. In the dialogue, what we found is that there was much more interaction between the preceptor and the learner about what the data actually said, how the resident interpreted that data, and then once they interpreted it, what they saw as the pieces that they should be focusing on at this point. And then the dialogue continued from there into next steps. Where we found is that in certain occasions, a monologue kind of style, or a more more didactic style, was necessary in certain cases, primarily not exclusively with residents that were in trouble and did not seem to be able to take the information that was presented in the contact or the content portion of the interview, and then from that figure out what their approaches should be. Anytime there was strictly a monologue, our experience was that residents, you know, had no input and had very little commitment to the approach, because, as you know, we did two separate sessions with each resident, physician dyad, 4 months apart. And so in the second dyad, we saw much less follow-up in terms of what had been agreed upon when there was a monologue in the first interview. Yeah. With the dialogue, there was a lot of negotiating and co-collaboration going on in terms of where the goals were and what the approach to achieving those goals might be. We found that in some preceptors, even with highly achieving residents, they fell back into the old habits of telling residents what to do. And in our experience, even with struggling residents, if you could get them on track, that they were then much more effective in terms of co-producing a learning change plan that had that was more likely to be impactful down the road.
Interesting, and in part because you do flag up in the article that part of the reason for worrying about this is how do we help trainees become more receptive to feedback that's being provided, and so given what you just said about some of these challenges arising despite people having been trained to do this, are you prepared yet to offer advice for how we might better help coaches understand and effectively apply the skills that you're identifying as being most useful for that purpose of helping trainees become more receptive to the feedback?
Certainly, our previous work had suggested that this kind of didactic approach was very ineffective in terms of bringing the resident on side, having them take responsibility for the feedback, and then responsibility for establishing and implementing goals. And so we were not surprised by this finding. The piece that we were a bit surprised about, though, was the how important the kind of skills that coaches used in the conversations. So what we call micro skills, things that you would think that preceptors who are physicians in our study would be using every day, you know, listening carefully, asking open-ended questions, probing for clarification. And those micro skills seemed really critical to the ability of a physician or preceptor to actually take that process through to a collaborative process. And so we were quite surprised how certain physicians who are preceptors in this study did not utilize those micro skills that most of us would be using every day in practice. And so we felt that in terms of future training, because all of these preceptors were trained, that we needed to spend a great deal more time in preparation on that set of skills, in addition to outlining the other process and content skills that we've discussed. The other piece that we thought we needed to have more focus on was the importance of consolidating what the learning change plan is going to be, whether that's orally or written. We find that the written format enhances the likelihood of people following through, so we would certainly encourage that as well. And again, maybe further training needs to occur to make preceptors comfortable with that approach.
Thank you. That all sounds like very good advice and very actionable items. As we always encounter, we're not going to have enough time to go into all the details. The paper is much more rich than we could even represent in this brief conversation, but it's an impressive piece of work from a larger program of research, as Heather alluded to at the start of this conversation. And so I would encourage anybody listening to go look at it, not just for the insight this particular article has to provide, but also as an example of how one approaches an issue programmatically and builds a deeper understanding over a series of studies over many years. You've been at this for quite some time.
A long time.
Cool. Congrats.
I've had two full sabbaticals taken up this
program. Well, congratulations, and I'm sure you will keep with it and look forward to seeing what continues to come from your group.
Great. Thanks very much.
Just as a last word for those who do want to track it down, the access point to this work we've just been discussing is a paper coming out in the May issue of Medical Education. You'll find it under the name of Heather Armson and the title of Identifying Coaching Skills to Improve Feedback Use in Postgraduate Medical Education. Thanks again, Heather.
Thanks very much. It was great to talk to you, Kevin.
You too.
Bye-bye.